I got called to work on outdoor bathroom, you know, in the middle of nowhere to do makeup for this model. And we end up sitting on a rock, you know, for 2 hours. So, and there's all sorts of stuff. And I've done a commercial photo shoot for 2 days, back to back for like 26 hours, like nonstop. And it was like raining and sunny and I was starving and it was mosquito. It just all sort of thing. Oh, there was one time I was in the desert for a photo shoot. There was no bathroom and I was stuck there for 8 hours. So I couldn't even drink water because I'm like, I don't want to use the bathroom. Yeah.
Welcome to Proudly Asian, a podcast series that tells bold and proud stories of Asians by Asians. My name is Isabel, your podcast host, and I'm here to find stories that challenge biases we face every day. There's never just one way to look at Asians. This podcast will take you through a deep dive into the life stories, struggles, and triumphs of young Asians around the world. On today's episode, we have Yo-Yo Yip, a Hong Kong-based makeup artist. Born in mainland China and raised in Hong Kong, Yo-Yo has over 10 years of experience in the makeup industry. She talks to us about her career journey becoming a celebrity makeup artist, common beauty misconceptions, and how you can communicate with your makeup artists.
All right, all right. Welcome back to Proudly Asian, everyone. And for those who are watching this episode on YouTube, you will know that our set is looking slightly different because today we are filming and recording this episode on location at this beautiful white themed studio. And sitting next to me is Hong Kong-based star celebrity makeup artist Yo-Yo. And for those who are based in Hong Kong, you might have even come across Yo-Yo's name, and you know that she's one of the hardest to book makeup artists in town. So I'm so glad that she's making time for us on Proudly Asian. So welcome to Proudly Asian, Yo-Yo. How
are
you?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. I'm good. Just finishing a class.
I know. Yeah. I know. Like when we were here, we were just like setting up for this filming, and then I was just telling you like, don't worry about me, like she was so busy working, running around the studio. So I'm so glad that she's making time for us, and I've been looking forward to this chat for so long.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Yeah, let's, because like we have known each other for like about 2 years, and we worked on like a few projects together, like, and I have felt the magic of Yo-Yo. Like, every time she does makeup on me, I just don't want to remove the makeup. Aww. Like, I wish I could keep it.
Like, tattoo it in your face.
Exactly.
I think that's like the best, like the greatest compliment a makeup artist can get from a client.
Yeah, like you make me feel so awesome. Like, every time you put makeup on me, I just feel like a princess no matter what I'm doing that day.
Felt like we should get married right now. It's like a proposal.
Yeah, so I mean, of course, for this chat, like I would like to learn a little bit more about like your journey as a makeup artist. Mm-hmm. How did you even get to this point that you're at? But it's only natural for us to start from the very beginning, which is like starting from the basics. Mm-hmm. Which we have a set of questions that we always ask every single guest of ours on Proudly Asian, which is, Yo-Yo, tell us about your background. Who are you? What are you? And where did you grow up?
Okay. I grew up in Hong Kong, but I was born in mainland China. So I moved here when I was quite little, like 3 or 4 years old. And then I largely spent all my childhood in Hong Kong. I first started working in like marketing and advertising industry when I graduated. And very quickly, I realized having a 9-to-6 job is not my thing. But I needed to make a living, right? And at that time, my only skill that could make money was makeup. Because doing uni, I went to a makeup school and learned doing makeup professionally as like a hobby. You know, I didn't expect it to be a career. But at that time, I was like, okay, this is my only money making skill. Why not give it a go? And now it's been almost 12, 13 years I've been doing it. Yeah.
Wow. Then it's true love for you as a career.
It really is. Honestly, having been doing it for so long, I still get the chills every time that when I did make a really beautiful makeup, you know, like I would be so impressed with myself and it felt so good. It's a bit cliche to say that, but sometimes I would tell my client, I was like, oh my God, you look so good. You're so lucky to have me. Yeah, but
yeah, those are exactly the moments. It's like sometimes it's not even about like how much you got paid for that, like the financial gain. Sometimes you just, after like a good job done, you're like, wow.
Yeah, you're really happy with yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like I'm really useful today.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. So, I mean, you grew up in Hong Kong. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what it was like growing up in Hong Kong for you? Any, you know, any childhood memories or like what was breakfast like or even from a, you know, career choice perspective, did your parents expect you to pursue a certain career that's quite different to what you're currently doing?
So I think growing up in Hong Kong, I just remember it's very fast paced. Like both of my parents works and we don't have a helper. So my parents, you know, my mom was the one who was like taking care of me before she goes to work. So I remember, you know, like having breakfast or dinner is always a rush, you know, because my mom has to get me out of the house so that she could, you know, prepare to go to work. And then the funny thing is my mom is such a good cook and efficient cook. It's insane. Like I felt like I could never live up to that. I remember when I was, you know, teenagers, I'll be sitting at home watching TV and my mom would come home from work like 6:30. And the moment she walked into the house, like I swear, 2 minutes later, something is frying in the wok away already. Exactly. Like, I'm like, how are you doing that? I just saw you in the walking through the gate. So, yeah, I just remember everything in my childhood is kind of like on fast forward. Everything goes really fast.
Go, go, go.
Yeah, there's no time of like, oh, you know, let's take our time to figure out what we really want. You know, it's more like, how do we get more, you know, go to more classes and do more, I don't know, activity, you know, in the time that I have. So I kind of felt like my parents wanted me to achieve the most I could within my potential. So naturally, I try to get a, you know, respectable job in advertising, you know, a decent
like
corporate
job.
Yeah, which is easy to understand, you know.
For parents, that's when they think it's a real job.
Yeah, like they could be, like they could rest, you know, thinking that our daughter is sorted or she at least could take care of herself, that kind of job. So I started wanting to get that kind of approval from my parents. But then I also am someone who's quite independent, and I think I have a pretty clear preference of what I like and don't like. So when I start working for a few years, I realized I really don't like the whole, you know, being in a big corporation and being like a tiny piece of a large project. It doesn't really satisfy me. I wanted to see something that I started from scratch to, you know, the end product. And that's why I think makeup is so rewarding for me, because I do the whole thing and I can see the transformation on a client. And yeah, so
in a way, it's like you see the whole progress and the transformation. It just makes you feel, you know, the impact that you have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's interesting from marketing, advertising to makeup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just wondering if there was ever like a turning point or any incident that really made you think, oh, I have to make the switch.
Well, it was actually at that time I was working in a boutique advertising agency, and then we have a small team, about 10, 12 people. At that time, my line manager, she's around like early 30s, you know, local, like Hong Kong ladies. And we were working very closely on a couple different projects. We're very, very busy. We always work until like midnight and come back again at 9 o'clock every day. And one day she suddenly collapsed at work.
Oh my God.
Yeah, from just overworking, I think. And obviously, you know, we sent her to the hospital and she took a few, I think within 2 weeks, she came back to work. And she said she was actually like paralyzed, like half of her body.
Partially.
Yeah, partially. And then she came back to the office without like being completely recovered. Like she couldn't even hear. But she was so busy. She has to come back. Like someone has to do the job. And at that point, I'm like, okay, this is not going to be my life. I need a job that could give me, you know, work-life balance, or at least like a healthier, you know, lookout in when I turn 30.
Yeah, at least you would have some time to recover if anything happens.
Exactly. So that would be the turning point. I was actually more scared. I was scared for my life. Like, I have like, to make a career
You were
change.
Saying like, this could be your future if you did not
I think
like,
everyone
change.
In the office think that, you know, like.
Did everyone kind of make a switch afterwards?
No, I felt like only I left, but I could see the eyes of everyone. Like, you could see fears in them. You know that. Mm. But I think in Hong Kong, it's very expensive. So people have to stay on the job just to pay the bills. And yeah, I was lucky that I was living with my parents. So I was, you know, I have that kind of freedom to choose what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you made the switch and kind of like started practicing as a professional makeup artist. Was it very challenging at the very beginning?
Oh, definitely. It was the time before social media took off. Mm. So it was extremely hard to promote myself. I think at that time, people still use like Yahoo rather than Google, you know?
Was it like the age when it's MSN Messenger?
Yeah, I think after that, okay. But like right after, but like before Instagram, people still use Facebook a lot, you know? Mm. So it was important to be, you know, promoting yourself on Facebook. And also you have to go to those forums, you know, like a wedding related forum to promote yourself. It was a whole different ballgame. Like now you just have to post a photo. Before you have to write articles and reviews and stories. So yeah, it's very different. And I obviously just started at that time and wasn't getting a lot of work, and I don't have a lot of connection as well. Like I didn't know anyone in the industry. So it was a very hard beginning, I would say. In the first couple of years, I wasn't getting a lot of work, and which ended up I doubting myself. Like I ended up,
I was like, did I make a mistake?
Yeah, I was like, was it the right move? And or even sometimes I question if I'm good enough for it, because I wasn't getting a lot of work. So naturally you start questioning yourself. Maybe it is because you're not good. That's why clients are not choosing you. In the end, I still push through, like, you know, I persevere and I still stay in the industry. I think after 3 or 4 years, I start to see like a bigger shift. And yeah.
Like, what kind of advice would you have for maybe like people who are looking into working as a makeup artist professionally, or even like makeup artists who are just starting out, you know?
I would say at that time, I wish someone would tell me that how to deal with rejection, you know. Mm. I think that would be the hardest thing, because if you're doing if you're getting a job, like an office job, you don't feel like rejected until the day you probably got fired. I mean, you know, but with makeup artists, every time you meet with a client and then you think they're going to choose you for their wedding, but in the end, they went for someone else, or when you did their makeup, they show you a face that they're not like super happy with it. It's like a rejection, you know? Mm-hmm. So I wish, you know, if someone is starting to become a professional makeup artist, I think they should learn to how to, you know, prepare for that kind of face-to-face rejection better.
To build the resilience.
Yeah, the resilience.
It's so hard though, because like, I can only imagine for the makeup industry, it's also a very subjective industry, right? Like you could be the best makeup artist, but there could still be customers who don't like your work. Mm-hmm. I can imagine like even now, like you are so established, there could still be you know, criticisms here and there. It's hard to please everyone. So it might be even more so for like young makeup artists or like people who are only starting out and they don't even have a lot of customers to be dealing with to begin with. So, you know, you mentioned eventually you started having more customers, more people are recognizing and you know, paying attention to your work. So from the advice perspective, do you have any tips for maybe like new makeup artists who are looking to build their network of customers? Like, you know, what kind of networking or outreach do they need to be doing?
I think social media is so powerful. They definitely have to make use of that. Also, another thing is if they are just starting out, everyone has friends, right? Like, you know, tell your friend that you now trying to be a makeup artist. Do that makeup for free, you know, take some photos. Everyone wants to share a beautiful photo on their social media. Ask them to tag you. It's so easy. Like, you could grow so fast now with social media, and people actually are interested in this because makeup is something exciting, you know. Makeup is not like something boring, you know. It's quite sexy. Everyone wants to learn about like the new makeup trend.
It's not like you're selling insurance.
Yeah, it's not like gardening tool or something, you know. So it's quite an easy sell. So I felt like make use of social media for sure and be patient.
As with like all the industries,
it takes time, you know, like doesn't matter how good you are. No one could come into a industry overnight, you know, become an overnight success, you know.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And now that you're a star makeup artist, like people, I think one comment that people all share would be that it's so hard to book yo-yo. I can confirm that myself too. And everyone must be thinking that, wow, like your job must be or, you know, like glitzy and glam, you know, you only see beautiful things, go to like fancy places. Is it true? Or are there any misconceptions about, you know, the job that you do or even as makeup artist in general?
Well, I do think being a makeup artist can be a very glamorous job because if you're working on weddings, especially, then you always get to go to like, you know, beautiful, you know, resort and hotel venues. You always work with beautiful clothing, you know, jewelry, everything is like nice and shiny. But there's also another side of makeup artists that people don't know. If you just started and you're working on low budget, like lower budget commercial work, you could, like I was telling you before we started, like I got called to work on an outdoor bathroom, you know, in the middle of nowhere to do makeup for this model. And we end up sitting on a rock, you know, for 2 hours. So, and there's all sorts of stuff. And I've done a commercial photo shoot for 2 days, back to back for like 26 hours, like nonstop, and it was like raining and sunny and I was starving and it was mosquito. It just all sort of thing. Oh, that was one time I was in the desert for a photo shoot. There was no bathroom and I was stuck there for 8 hours. So I couldn't even drink water because I'm like, I don't want to use the bathroom. Yeah.
Wow. And you had to like still, you know, maintain your energy and then make sure your client looks good because you also, you know, as a makeup artist, sometimes like when I am on a shoot or when I'm on a job, like I also appreciate it when like makeup artists are also kind of like your carer.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Like other than making you look good physically with the makeup, they also try, oh, you want water?
Yeah.
You know, all that. But then like despite you, you were in that kind of situation, you still had to keep the bride or like the model like motivated and taken care of.
Yeah, I think you know the situation very well because you're the one who's getting makeup done. And you could tell the makeup artist has to do so much more than just applying makeup, right? We have to carry your jacket if it's like an outdoor shoot in wintertime. And we have to sort of bring waters everywhere for our brides and our client. So yeah, so even though we're not feeling our best, but we know that we are the person that are closest to the clients and we try to be, I mean, I always try to be professional and provide the most that I could, you know, within reason. So yeah, sometimes it's a very exhausting work, you know.
Yeah, so it definitely goes beyond just like putting on makeup.
No, that would be like 50% of the job.
It's like part of it is like really like keeping, you know, the energy of the bride. And then, you know, when the bride is like panicking, oh, don't worry, you're fine.
Yeah. Oh my God, you read my
therapist.
Mind. It really is. I mean, because we have been through hundreds, if not thousands of weddings. So we have seen it all. But the bride is usually the first wedding or the only wedding. Mm. They would, you know, even though the smallest hiccup, they could feel, you know, stressed or anxious, right? But, and we were there to, you know, just make them feel better and talk to them. And what are you going to do while you're doing makeup for someone? You talk, right? So yeah, I try to soothe them a bit and just by telling them like,
You know,
this happened. Don't worry. Yeah.
Wow. So would you say, just out of curiosity, do you consider yourself an introvert or extrovert? And because like now you're mentioning as a makeup artist, rather than just doing the makeup, you also have to keep talking.
Yeah.
Right? Like, do you find this part sometimes it could be
draining?
Yeah.
So I actually think that I'm introverted. Mm. Like I prefer when I'm not working, I actually prefer to spend time on my own. Or after a long day of work, I prefer to go home and not talk to anyone. But obviously being in this job require me to communicate constantly a lot with people. And I think it's more helpful if I'm slightly more talkative and outgoing. I would make my client more comfortable as well. I imagine if you're already nervous getting married and then your makeup artist is like dead silent, you know, it's just very awkward, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of train to be more extroverted than I actually am for the job. But I think a lot of people are, right, these days.
Professional extrovert.
Yeah. It could be draining, but... Yeah.
But I know that from my experience working with you, like I know you're like so good at your job. Like there were a few points that still stood out to me. Like the first time I worked with you, you were telling me about how like before I even arrived at your studio, you said you were scrolling through my IG to just kind of figure out like what kind of look could look good on me. Yeah. And then I was like, I have never worked with a makeup artist who would say that to me.
Oh.
And then the other thing was like, indeed, like you were very talkative. Like it was so amazing always like chatting with you whenever we work together. And then just like always without me realizing it, you'd be like, oh, we're done. And then like, you know, even chatting with you, I forget to look at the mirror to check how I look, right? And then when you tell me, we're done. And then I look in my mirror, wow, I look so pretty.
Oh, thank you for saying that. It's all a strategy. We get our client not, you know, focus on the chatting so that they don't challenge my work. They don't like give me, you know, feedback every 5 minutes.
That works.
No, but I really love the first part you were talking about, the researching for my clients before meeting them. I think it's just something that I love to do because I think if I am a customer, if I go somewhere, I would appreciate if this whoever it is, can be a makeup artist, can be whatever service related person, try to learn a little bit more about me before meeting me, you know, or learn about my preference. I would feel special, you know, and that's I want true. To make my clients feel special. So that's all something I always do.
You know, like I also work as an event MC, like sometimes like when I arrive on site, like the client might expect me to not know anything about the rundown or the script. But then sometimes like when I arrive, it's like, oh, I already read everything. Like I could tell you about what the rundown looks like and the script. And sometimes like you would see, you know, a little bit of joy on their face. It's like, you know, I was like, yeah, I was like, got you.
Yeah. People always appreciate extra work.
Yeah. So I definitely know that like working with you, like sometimes working on other jobs with other makeup artists, I would still bring a little bit of my makeup and tools. But then I know that every single time I work with you, I don't need to bring anything.
Like,
I don't need to fix my makeup afterwards.
Thank you so much.
And I mean, going back to the chat, you know, you pursuing this professionally, like how did you know you wanted to focus on wedding rather than other types of makeup? Because there are other types, right? Like I know some makeup artists would focus on like theater or special effects.
Right. I guess I love wedding because it's very pretty. Like I mean, as a girl, obviously I love all the, you know, good, like the beautiful wedding dresses and shoes. But I remember when I first started doing makeup, I kind of had this wish in my head. I said to myself, I was like, oh, I wish I could do makeup to make, you know, my living. And I also wish I could travel because of my work. And I think wedding was the kind of makeup that gets you travel. Before the pandemic, I would sometimes go to like Tuscany 3 times in a month, you know. I would go to Morocco for work, and I'll go to Greece, you know, Italy, different parts of Italy, and Paris, obviously, and sometimes UK. And Iceland, I've been to Iceland for photo shoot multiple times. Yeah. So these were the things that I first kind of imagined the life that could be. And then I envisioned being a makeup artist that traveled through the work, through the world to do my work. And that was why, that was the reason I chose a wedding. Yeah.
It's a valid reason. And you kind of get paid to travel. Go to all those places. And sometimes you might, because for photography, you need to look for some, you know, like visually interesting places. So you might end up going to somewhere that looks like crazy.
Places that I probably wouldn't have gone myself, you know, even though I'm on holiday. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. One of my clients, so you know that in Utah, they have this Antelope Canyon, right?
Yes.
Beautiful. Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned it to you. So
I have been also.
Oh, it's
crazy.
Stunning.
Like when you're there, you're just like, what am I looking at?
it's like the orange, like different shades. But you have, did you go there on a tour, like with people, right? In front
of
you?
Yeah, it was a walking tour.
Yeah. So the problem of that place is it's so narrow. And if you have people in front of you, it's very hard to get a good photos, right? But the whole area is like a native preservation area. My client actually booked a private a hole, what do you call it, a tunnel.
You could do that
if you stay in Amman. So they book a whole place for like 2 hours, and we get to choose the best lighting of the day as well, because how narrow it is, you have to go there like at noon, so the sun is right above and you get most beautiful pictures, and you could play with sand, you could do all sort of things when no one is around, you know. And I don't think anyone would get that kind of chance to do it because if I'm a normal traveler, I would just go on a tour like you.
Exactly,
right? But you don't get to have the whole canyon to yourself.
I didn't know about that.
It was amazing. It felt really magical.
I could imagine on your job you must be like, sometimes you travel and then you're like, wow, I didn't realize you could do this.
Exactly.
Look at a whole canyon.
You know, if you spend 500 times, you know, more of the money, then you can get this. Why not?
Wow. It's crazy. I mean, that's a very valid reason to become a wedding makeup artist for those who want to travel the world.
Yeah, not too late to start. We also offer like makeup classes if you want to become one.
Yes, look for Yo-Yo on IG. It will be so easy to find her. But I mean, like, those are some of the highlights of your job. But are there any lowlights or challenges? Like moments where you might, I don't know if you ever would think, oh, it sucks.
I would say the long hours is really the most difficult part of my job. Weddings usually in Hong Kong, they are at least 12, 14 hours easily, sometimes 16. And I have to start very early, like 4 o'clock, you know, and then I finish around 10. But sometimes I have back-to-back wedding. So I would finish around 11. Like I got home around 11, and then I have another wedding starting in 5, 6 hours.
You sleep a few hours.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's definitely beyond 9 to 5, 9 to 6.
Yeah, definitely longer than that. And I remember, I think around 2019, it was my busiest year before pandemic. And I remember myself sitting on my couch around like 4:30 in the morning, waiting for my cab. And I haven't been, like, I haven't had a day off in like 20 somewhat days. Like, I was just working back to back every day on a different thing. It's not necessarily weddings, but could be all sort of a gig. And I would just, like, when I was waiting for my taxi driver, I sort of just burst into tears. Because I was so tired. And then I just know that I won't be able to close my eyes in another 16, 17 hours. And I felt quite sorry for myself, I guess. So that was hard, you know. I would say that is like the lowest point of my career. And really makes me question, why do I have to work so much? But being a makeup artist is that you try to always cater to the need of your client. If they want me to come at 3 a.m., I wouldn't say no to them because I know it's their important day. So I try to be accommodating. I would still push through even though I'm tired. But sometimes it is very draining.
Mm-hmm. You know? Then have you, I mean, now, like, have you learned maybe to just set a little bit of boundaries with your work?
Oh, definitely. So now no more back-to-back wedding. Mm. I will only do one, and at least one wedding and one day of break in between minimum. Yeah.
And it also helps that you're also growing your team.
Yeah, very fortunately, I've always been interested in teaching as well. Other than doing other people's makeup, I enjoy sharing it with people, either professionally or just with people who wants to learn how to do their makeup day to day. So I have been giving professional makeup classes for about 5 or 6 years. And I find some really talented and kind, you know, girls that
who end up working for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. I'm really fortunate to have a team that I don't think they are like, I don't really see them as colleagues. We're like really good friends. We travel together, hang out together. And I feel like that kind of friendship, it's really, you know, special. Yeah.
It's a dream job.
Yeah.
Dream workplace when you are just kind of like friends.
Yeah. And everyone has, because sometimes even though your best friend doesn't have the same job as you, right? Mm. It's hard to talk to them in a way that they understand everything about your work. And with my team, we understand each other so well. And, you know, we could always complain about, you know, stuff. And they would understand, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very nice. And we're not kind of competitive in a way at all because we all work together.
Complement each other.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's really nice.
Cool. And I mean, just before I went into this recording, I met a person who is looking into becoming a makeup artist. And I just told her like, oh, look, I'm actually going to like speak with a very experienced and established makeup artist in Hong Kong. I was just like, as someone who's just starting out, do you have any questions for her? And then she did ask a couple of very good questions. Mm-hmm. The first question is like, what keeps you interested to stay in this industry?
Am I allowed to say the money?
Yes. I think it's good. It's good that like people get, you know, like get to know the reality as well.
Well, obviously I think makeup artists pay very well for, because we have pretty high hourly rates. So that's financially rewarding. But I don't think I'm just doing it for the money. I really love the satisfaction that it gives me. And like sometimes when a client comes to me, she would say, oh, I have tried a few different makeup artists. No one is able to give me what I want. So I came to you, like, please help me. Like this morning, actually, I started work a little bit earlier because a follower on Instagram reached out to me. She said she's getting married on end of this year and she wanted to book me, but I'm already booked. And she said she couldn't find anyone that is good. She tried a few and she's not happy with the makeup. So she asked if I could still do her makeup and take some picture and use it as a reference for other makeup artists that she's going to use. And yeah, so I did it and she was really happy. I was really happy that I was able to make her feel pretty, you know, the way she wanted. So yeah, that's that kind of satisfaction. I don't think any kind of other jobs would be able to, you know, give me. Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, on the other side, a lot of makeup artists can relate to this as well. Like sometimes they might get some feedback or even criticism, or even sometimes their customers do not like their work. Yeah. So as a professional makeup artist, you work with so many different clients. They all have different facial features from different age range. Like how do you stay confident, or how do you manage whenever you get a little bit of like maybe slightly negative feedback?
So about the confidence part, I think it actually comes with experience. The more years you spend in the industry, that means more face you have been, you know, paint on. And the more different feature that you have worked with, you learn through try and error. You just know what works naturally by looking at a person now. I mean, after I've been doing it for 10 years, I don't think that's like something that, you know, someone who started in the industry has to worry about, because it comes naturally. If you like, and it's also something you cannot rush, you know. You really have to do your numbers and your time. You have to paint enough faces to learn about it. How do I deal with negative feedback? That is difficult. I would say, because when I first started, I was younger and, I mean, I was a bit more egocentric and I didn't take negative feedback very well, to be honest. And I was first, you know, I would be quite defensive in the beginning. Like I would think, oh, you don't know it. You know, you're not professional. Like I would think to myself, I mean, I wouldn't tell it to my client. But then gradually it became a self-doubt, you know, like a source of, you know, I started to question myself a lot. If people are giving me negative feedback, doesn't mean that I'm actually not good to, you know, I'm not very talented or gifted or just, you know, even good for this job. And then even nowadays, I would still occasionally meet a client or two who are not happy with what I'm doing. But now I understand that it's just so natural. Everyone, like you were saying earlier, makeup is so subjective and everyone has their own preference. It's like, I like my egg saltier, or you like your egg raw and runny and, you know, unsalted. It's like totally fine, you know? It's not a question of right and wrong or if I'm good or not, just preference. And I, being a professional makeup artist, I should be able to give my client exactly what they want without just being, you know, attach your personal, you know, feelings to it.
Mm-hmm. And the most important part is like how they feel, right?
Yeah.
Instead of like you from a professional pair of eyes thinking like this would look good on you. But then like, I think like you might have your professional judgment, but sometimes you also have to work with the client's preference. Like if thicker brows actually make the person happier, then you might have to roll with it, right?
Yeah, I definitely will roll with it because in the end of the day, it's their special day, it's their occasion, their wedding, their face. Completely, you know, I don't have my name stamp on it, you know. So I'm happy to make them feel beautiful, whatever needed, you know.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. I can, like, I've been on the, I mean, I haven't had my wedding, but it's like whenever I'm on a job, like sometimes I would just feel like, oh, this makeup does not make me look good. But then other people would keep telling me that, oh, like you look fine, but there's like, I just don't feel good in it. And to be able to find a makeup artist who can make you feel good, not just look good, it's just so hard. It's so hard. And since we are talking about, you know, like customer feedback, mm-hmm. like, you know, it kind of sparked a question for me as well. You know, I am coming from more like a customer mm-hmm. perspective. And even back then when I was in TV news, working as a TV anchor, I used to work with a lot of TV makeup artists who were on site working full time for the company. Mm-hmm. And I would often find it a bit hard for myself to share any feedback with them because there are a few makeup artists who are really good. I love working with them. A few, maybe their makeup or their styles just don't really work with my face. And every time when I walked into the makeup room and I knew, oh, I'm paired with this person, I might have to fix my makeup a little more afterwards. Right. And I also felt like, like because she's my colleague, I shouldn't really say anything.
Mm.
But at the same time, like as I worked with more makeup artists afterwards, like sometimes even like you would tell me that it's okay for me to communicate with you what I want or yeah. share some feedback real time, right? So from a customer's perspective, what advice would you have for us to share our feedback with our makeup artists?
Well, it's actually a really good question because not a lot of people, especially in Asian, you know, culture, we are quite, like, we try to avoid conflict, right? Mm-hmm. And giving out negative feedback is like a no-no, you know? Like, yeah. It feels like you're challenging the whole, you know, the peaceful relationship that we have. You're upsetting the balance. I think there's some ways to give feedback to makeup artists that doesn't make them flip their makeup case.
I mean, first of all, just don't say this looks ugly. You have to be specific, right?
Yeah. Just don't say I don't like it. You know, tell us why you don't like it. But I mean, seriously, I think most important thing is like, don't tell us you hate it until we finish everything. It takes so long to do, say, a smoky eyes or a defined eyeliner. It takes a lot of time to balance it. If you already can catch a feeling that you don't like it, or you can see some imbalance of the makeup, just tell us like immediately so we can fix it. I would feel a lot more upset, like after I clean up the whole palette, you know, my all the makeup, and I felt like my job is done. And then you say, actually, can you bring out your whole case back again to fix this thing? And also, I think just being honest, you know, you could always start with just validating something that they're doing that you like, you know, like tell them that some part of the, you know, the brows or the lips that you love, but maybe not the eyes, and tell them exactly why you don't like it and what you're looking for. Or maybe show them a photos of makeup that you have done before that you love. I think because makeup is so abstract, if you don't use picture and if you are not someone very good with words and communication, it could get quite frustrating if you're just telling the person what you don't like instead of something that you were looking for. So I guess, yeah, be specific and open and be immediate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess like on the flip side, sometimes like now when I work with any stylist or like makeup artist, and if I know the person is really good, mm-hmm. I would just be like, I trust your expertise. Mm. Like you are the pro, you tell me what looked good on me and surprise me. And most of the time they do too.
I think most of the time that when you give them the free range, yeah. It actually works out the best as
well.
It's
the trust, right?
Yeah. If you gave me a few things that I couldn't do, I would become sort of like cautious, you know, every time, whatever I do, I'll be, you know, I'm starting to like watch what I can do. So I'd be more careful. So I'm playing safe.
Mentally, if you're working with a very micromanaging client, you would start like limiting your creative range.
Definitely, because you don't want to do anything that would trigger this person even more, you know. I actually have clients once, she basically was trying to hold my hand to do her makeup, I think. But it was fine. It only happened once. The whole makeup, I think, normally it takes about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we spent 4.5 hours on the makeup. So you can imagine.
Yeah. Like, I think sometimes it's like when the client thinks like they can do a better job than you, then that's when it kind of like mentally also impact the person who's working on, it could be makeup, it could be photography, it could be anything. Any creative work. Because yeah. Like what you just described there, it almost sounded like I have a friend who's a photographer. She was telling me how there was one time the client literally grabbed her camera and then started deleting photos off of the camera. God. It's like, no, not this one, not this one.
Oh, wow.
So it's like when you mentioned that, I was like, it suddenly like reminded me that example, and it could be kind of like disastrous, because even if you're a pro, even if you're really good, it really compromises your confidence at that particular moment. And then you just started feeling a little lost and, oh, I'll just do what you say.
Yeah, I feel like it is true for any kind of occupation and any kind of relationship in the world. It's just like if one person starting to become too harsh and too critical, it really kills any space for being creative or imaginative.
Working in the Asian or like working with Asian clients, sometimes like they tend to want to, you know, control the outcomes a bit too much, and they end up becoming a little bit too critical or too micromanaging, and then it would feel like, you know, the other person would just feel like they are being talked to, like, oh, I'm not trusted to do my job. So I think the trust there is very important whenever you're working with like makeup artists or photographers and anything.
Yeah, but I guess being an Asian means we sort of more or less expect that to happen already whenever we go into work.
That's true.
Yeah, so our, you know, tolerance, our threshold is actually a lot higher, you know. Sometimes when I hear someone say something ridiculous, and I would just like, you know, this person doesn't know, you know, just before I would get upset, I was like, what do you mean you want a brown eye? Everyone's eyes is brown. But now I'm just like, oh, do you mean actually you want it to be like this? Like, I try to be a bit more understanding and put, like, help them to elaborate what they want, because I'm so used to it already.
Yeah, like, always the delivery is like, maybe let me try this on you, see if you like it. If you don't like it, we can go back to.
Yeah. Honestly, being makeup artist is like soft skill. It can sometimes be more important than your actual makeup skill.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. That's something that I think a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, since we're talking about like Asian beauty, right? Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering, like, you know, from a veteran makeup artist yourself, you have had a lot of experience working with different clients, different facial features. Are there any like useful makeup techniques or tips that you could share with our listeners, especially those who have Asian facial features? Like, are there any particular looks that work better with, like, let's say East Asian facial features and, you know, and at the same time, like Southeast Asian?
Right.
Are there any observations? Yeah.
So, well, you were bringing up a good point. Actually, we have a pretty distinctive difference, even though maybe not to Westerner, but East Asian and Southeast Asian, we could have very different facial feature because I think East Asian, we have a relatively flat like feature, you know, there's not much like change in the contour of our face. Like our nose can be quite close to our cheek, you know?
So the side profile is always a no-no.
Yeah, like we always look like we're missing like one third of our nose, you know, when we go on camera. So I think contour is really important for East Asian to do it right, you know? And for Southeast Asian, then they actually have way more distinctive, you know, feature than us. But for them, the skin palette is a problem because I think they are exposed to way more sun and they could tend to get quite yellow, you know. So I actually, when they do their foundation, they need to maintain like the glowiness of their skin to kind of, because in photo, when you see someone has like shiny or glowy skin, it translates a smooth and well-moisturized, well-maintained skin texture, you know? So I think for them, it's more like the texture. For us, it's more like, you know, contouring, defining, you know, like telling people like, this is my nose, this is my cheek, this is my jawline.
So like, bring out the nose.
Bring out everything, yeah.
Yeah, and is it, I think for East Asians, it's also very common for them to use like double eyelid tape and all.
Yeah, double eyelid tape is definitely something very essential for, I would say most Chinese clients that I work with, their eyes are quite puffy, if not someone, I don't know if your audience are familiar with monolids and the terms, because a lot of East Asian, we were born with a very tiny eyelid, sometimes it's called monolid. So in order to make our eyes look bigger in photos, in camera, that we have to put the eyelid tape. And it's something very tricky to work with, actually. It takes a lot of practice.
Yes, yes. I think it's like sometimes it's not even about the skills of the makeup artist. Sometimes when your double eyelid tape does not stay, it could also mean your eyes are particularly puffy that day.
Yeah, could be. If you're on camera, if you need to be on camera or you want to look good, stay away from salty food the night before.
So hot.
I know.
Even hot for myself. Yeah. And I mean, I'm just also wondering, like, if there are any like common misconceptions when it comes to, you know, like beauty standards that you want to debunk, because like I think, you know, back in the day, right? Like when it was still that, like, you know, beauty YouTuber era, there would be a lot of like Western YouTubers, you know, obviously they're Caucasian. So the kind of makeup techniques that they teach people could be more like Western or like Caucasian centric.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, like growing up, I would watch more of their makeup tutorial videos and then I would try out the techniques. And then as an ethnically Chinese person myself, my confidence would be compromised because I was like, how come I don't look like anything like them? And then I just thought it was my problem. But now, of course, with all the Asian beauty bloggers and YouTubers, you know, flourishing on the internet, I know that there are also some very specific makeup techniques for East Asian, Southeast Asian, or different like facial features. So I'm just wondering if there are any like clients or anyone that you have met who might have some sort of misconceptions around some beauty techniques that maybe you want to highlight and say, oh, that's actually not true.
Well, actually, one thing I get asked a lot, like a lot, basically every woman that I've done makeup for, when they are like, I think past the age of 30, they will always ask me how to cover the dark, the under eye circle. It's just something I get asked every time. Every time I teach a class, people want to come to learn how to cover the dark eye circle. But the truth is, a lot of the time that it is not like pigmentation anymore, whatever that you're seeing under your eyes, it seems, people always said, oh, it seems to get worse and worse over years, you know, it's get increasingly difficult to cover it entirely, to conceal it with concealer. Like, what am I doing wrong? They thought they need to refresh the technique to learn how to do it properly. But actually, it has something to do with our facial feature, like just how the way that our face age, you know, like when with age, our face gets saggier, you know, and then the apple of our cheek tend to get like lower and lower. And then it reveals like a bigger part of the hollow part of our skull. And that's why you have a shadow, because that's not enough collagen there. So you're not actually trying to cover any pigmentation. It's a shadow of, yeah. So it's very hard to cover your under eye area when you get older. Quite a lot of the time that you have to go for, what do you call that? Like a HIFU or Thermage, like a high intensity beauty treatment for that, you know, like it's more like an anti-aging problem than a makeup problem. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think if anyone hearing this, like start applying, you know, eye cream or face lifting serum earlier. Like I learned it the hard way. I felt like it's too late for me.
Oh, no, you look amazing.
Oh, thank you. But I'm actually really grateful that I choose makeup to be my profession, because I benefit the most. I actually just put a photo of myself on my Instagram yesterday. I don't know if you have seen it. I get asked a lot by people why I started doing makeup. And I was like, it's because when I was teenagers, I didn't look pretty enough. And I was worried that I would never get a date. So I started learning to do makeup. It's more like a surviving, need than rather than, you know, a choice. Yeah. You know? So,
wow.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's just like sometimes, like even looking at people online, you know, they have perfect makeup and everything. But I mean, we should all know by now, like social media is not the reality. So we shouldn't really like look at someone else or someone, or even for more mature women, like they shouldn't be looking at a younger person's picture and be like, why do I not look like her?
Yeah.
Right. Like sometimes we need to just embrace, like with age, there are some like signs of aging that like we might be able to embrace a little gracefully. So that might be the secret to beauty, would you say?
I think, yeah, definitely. I think don't use the photos of yourself 5 years ago to comparing with yourself nowadays. Like that's going to make you really depressed. And there's nothing wrong with your makeup technique. It's just aging naturally. Yeah.
But I mean, in my opinion, I do feel like as people age a little bit, they tend to look better. Like because they have more confidence, they do have more wisdom, or at the very least, I feel like for men, they look better as they age.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I think for women, we tend to put our focus on the tiny things like, oh, I got one wrinkle, you know, but actually overall, you look so much.
How do I put it? So no one's going to like look at you.
Right. Like,
close up,
right? Yeah, it's like the whole look and the way that you like you were saying, carry yourself and your aura, you know, just
there you go, that's the secret. It's not just the makeup, but of course having a great makeup artist like Yo-Yo helps a lot, because it does not just change how you look, it changes how you feel.
It does. Like, I hate to say it, I do feel different when I put on makeup versus when I'm like not wearing anything.
That's what makeup is for.
Yeah, like when I wear makeup, I kind of like want the attention of other people. I want to talk to people. But when I'm like just not wearing anything, I tend to like avoid attention. You know, like don't look at me, you know. Yeah.
I get you. Like, I mean, if makeup doesn't make us feel better, like why even put on makeup?
What's the point of doing it? Yeah.
Exactly. So, but now it's time for us to move on to the next segment, which is called Rapid Bias. Now, in this segment, I'll be asking my guests biased questions that they've got asked at some point in life. And in Yo-Yo's case, it would be some misconceptions people have about her job or even, you know, just makeup as an industry. So, Yo-Yo,
yes.
Are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, let's go. First question. Anyone who can apply their own makeup can be a makeup artist.
Well, technically nothing wrong with that, but depends if you can make money or not. Because I think doing your makeup for yourself very well doesn't mean that you can do the makeup for another person very well. It's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like, even if you're lucky enough to be able like to do your mom's makeup well, it doesn't mean
you can do everyone, because everyone's eyes is different. Everyone has their own quirk, you know, like something that they needed to adjust differently. Mm. And I think the reason not having a professional makeup artist makes the world's difference is that we're able to see, notice those tiny differences on everyone, and then know how to use makeup to make up for those, you know, places that they need a bit more emphasis or need a bit more hiding, or you know. So yeah.
So every time when you work with a client, you already start reading the person's face, and you already make mental notes to yourself that, oh, that might need a bit of lifting, blah, blah, blah.
Oh my God, I do that on MTR. When I'm like sitting on MTR, I look at the person sitting in front of me, like I scan everyone's face. I was like, oh, I would have been doing this or that, yeah.
I'm feeling so insecure right now. Being
don't
sad.
Be, that's what my friend says all the time. My friend would, every time we go out, my friend would be like, I'm not wearing makeup today, don't judge me.
And then, I sitting right in front of Yo-Yo, I'm literally thinking that she's probably thinking like, yeah, her eyeshadow is not good.
I love your eyeliner. You did it perfectly. You did it so well.
Thank you.
I should start by doing that. Yeah, I should give you some affirmation first.
I approve
your makeup today.
Yeah, and the second question, if you don't wear a lot of makeup, you can't be a makeup artist.
That is totally not true, but I do get that a lot. I personally don't really wear a lot of makeup. I wear it today for you.
It's a light, natural makeup.
Yeah, but I honestly don't like putting on makeup. Because like I was saying, some of my job, I have to get up at 4 o'clock. Who have the time? I would sleep for 15 more minutes. Like, I don't care. I don't have to look good. And I kind of felt like it's a lot like if you watch a fashion runway, no matter how glamorous of the clothing are, in the end, the designer walk out, it's always just t-shirt and jeans, right? I don't think you need to be the user, you know, like you don't have to actually wearing those kind of clothes or be the person who wears a lot of makeup in order to be able to provide that kind of, to be the designer, to be the creator of a beautiful makeup or beautiful, you know, gowns, right? So yeah, that's why I don't really wear a lot of makeup. So it's not true, you don't have to wear makeup in order to become a makeup artist.
That's good to know. Yeah. And the third question is, makeup artists use only the most expensive products.
That's what I used to think as well, that I felt like I could only justify to charge people for money if I use like the most high-end brand. But I would say now with, you know, like there's so many new brands coming out every year, so many interesting beauty brands. So I don't think being expensive, like a price tag, doesn't matter at all.
No, yeah. Sometimes like the price tag of beauty products only reflect the marketing budget.
It does. Yeah.
And like sometimes whenever I work with makeup artists, I like to ask them, hey, like what's the beauty hacks, you know, products that you recommend? And sometimes they would tell you just, oh, just get this from a drugstore, it's only like $10.
Yeah, seriously, like one of my favorite concealer costs about HK$100, and I've been using that for over a decade.
Like, wow.
Yeah, and it's the best under eye concealer.
You have to tell me off air.
I would.
And the next question, being a makeup artist is not a real job.
Oh my God, that's like coming from my mom. So when I first started doing makeup, my mom was so confused. Like, she doesn't understand how you can make money from doing makeup. She thought I was selling makeup in a department store. And she'd been thinking, like, she thought I was a sales lady for many, many years until one time one of her colleagues was getting married and my mom was so nice. She was trying to get me some business. So she tried to promote me to her client, her colleague. She said, oh, my daughter is also a makeup artist. Let me show you like her name or Instagram or whatever. I don't think my mom even has Instagram. Anyway, so her colleague said, oh my God, like your daughter is Yo-Yo Yip. I actually tried to book her, but I couldn't. And at that point, my mom realized that I was doing an actual job that with demand, like actual demand, you know? I felt like she thought I was just doing some part-time stuff, you know, to, I don't know. Yeah,
I know.
She was really worried.
I share that struggle as well. So as with a lot of our previous guests on Proudly Asian, where like some of them, if they are in like acting or mm-hmm. like creative jobs, like, the hardest struggle is not to explain to their friends or to their clients what they do, but yeah. to their Asian parents.
Yeah, it's so hard. I feel them, you know. I feel like nowadays with makeup, because of social media, makeup sounds like quite a popular job, you know, everyone kind of respect it. But back in the day when I first started, it really wasn't. And yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Like, I mean, there are so many like misconceptions and myths around makeup artistry as well. I think even before I started working as a TV anchor, I had no idea how to work with a makeup artist. So there must be a lot of people who would be like, you know, like reaching out of the blue first time for their wedding, say, hi, I want my makeup done. How does this work?
You know, yeah.
They had no idea they could request a trial first.
Yeah.
But then with social media, like it's just kind of making the process a lot more transparent, which is great.
Definitely. But,
that's all the bias questions we have for this segment. Thanks for answering all the questions so perfectly. Now, for us to wrap up the episode, for those who haven't started following your work yet, like where can they find you? How can they like book you if they can?
Oh my God. Okay.
Like, don't even try.
Like, don't fight, you know, save all the spots for you.
I know.
I mean, definitely follow me on Instagram. And then I'm recently trying to do YouTube, which is really fun.
Yeah.
I'm doing YouTube as well, but mostly Instagram. And if you want to communicate, like get in touch, connect with me, just send me a DM on Instagram. Yeah. I might miss your message, but
allow her some time to get back to you.
Yeah, sorry. I know that it always takes me hours to reply your message.
No,
because
it's
you
fine.
Know what? Once I start doing makeup, like for a person, it at least took me 2 hours,
and
I can't really look at my phone. And then once I start looking at my phone, it's like 50 messages. And
I understand. I completely. And that's also
same
like,
as you, right?
Yeah, like when I'm like hosting or like doing some. I mean, I'm definitely not looking at my phone. Like,
yeah,
I would switch on airplane mode even. So it's like sometimes like the whole like instant messaging, it makes us feel like we have to get back to people immediately. But honestly, like we just can't work this way. Like we can't be doing our job while like still replying instantly. Like, do you want responses or do you want the work?
Exactly. Like I got a client who got a bit annoyed at me. She said, I tried to message you a few times, you didn't respond. And I was like, oh, I was, you know,
there's so 50 other people.
You know.
So instant response culture needs to go. It stresses people out.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll definitely link Yo-Yo's YouTube channel and also Instagram page in the episode description. So you guys can go check out her work, or she's been sharing some makeup techniques and tips. You can also feel free to follow and learn from her. Yeah, and finally, we have one last question for you, Yo-Yo. Before we go, we ask all of our guests on Proudly Asian, but for yourself, right? Like to you, what does it mean to be proudly Asian?
What does it mean? That's a really good question. I really haven't thought about it that way.
A lot of guests have said like they have never been asked this before.
Yeah, I never. I think I have a lot of friends, like even my partner, he's not Asian, you know, and being exposed to a lot of Western culture, I understand that I felt like growing up as Asian, we have a lot of you know, kind of limitation. Like we Asian people really cares about what other people think. So we sort of limit our choices, you know, within like a very small boundary, whatever that is being, you know, we think is approved by others. We sort of act in a way that kind of like we're acting in a very small circle, you know? But I was actually really proud of how like the person that I have become now, you know, even though I was grew up with all this limitation, but I think it also grounds me, you know. I have met some people who, you know, educated in the West and they grow up just being completely, you know, allowed to be whoever that they want. But you would think it gives them all the freedom in the world that makes them, you know, just really flourish and really happy. But they end up feeling quite lost, you know, and they weren't able to find what they want to do until they're like late 20s or even early 30s. But I felt like I was quite motivated all the time because my parents didn't allow me to fail. So I know that I have to be someone, you know, at least not, you know, yeah.
At least you have a foundation.
Yeah. And then I felt like now, like in when I'm like mid 30s, I'm really grateful that, you know, I was like a hardworking Asian, really. Like I have something, like now I could easily go on holiday whenever I want and, you know, go anywhere that I want. And thanks to my hard work, I guess. Yeah. But it's also like a very Asian stereotype that we work really hard, you know. But I'm actually really happy with my work ethic, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that's what set me aside from all the other people in my industry.
That's cool. I mean, we do work very hard and we can be very proud of that as well. And, you know, like you mentioned, like even growing up with all the limitations, like on the bright side, it kind of like start us off from a very solid foundation.
Yeah.
And then from there, we should always feel free to try to expand a little bit, you know, like go beyond the boundaries a little bit. So.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to.
I think we're glad. I'm glad that I didn't like stray away from like I didn't deviate too much, and then now I'm allowed to do whatever I want. You know?
Yes, like, and you can go anywhere. It's like sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, Yo-Yo, for sharing. You know, your story, your journey of becoming this successful makeup artist. It's so inspiring to be hearing. You know, like the reality, the struggles, and also. The triumphs that you end up having.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Seriously, it's really fun doing it.
Thank you. Yeah. I had so much fun.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of Proudly Asian. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at proudly.asian for more content. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in and signing off for now. I'm Isabel Wong.